And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Culture is the culture. It's 4 to 6A to B, competitive excellence, and the brotherhood. The plan to win has never changed. So the culture here and the plan to win is always going to be here at Ohio State.
I have terrible news for you. I won't be coming to visit you in Dallas for an Ohio State Cotton Bowl playoff appearance.
Actually, was kind of sad for me. I was really looking forward to having you here for a few days. But I know that
We
are the kings of grab ass on this show. I don't know how much laughing we should do today because I don't think people might be in the mood for that.
It's football, man. It's not a funeral. It's football.
I feel bad because I know that, let's just get into it. Ready? So, first of all.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Okay.
Let me say the score real quick. Ohio State lost to Michigan.
Now, everybody, if you missed the game but listening to this podcast somehow, you should go see a therapist and then continue listening. But, thank you for the score. I just want to start here. Has there been a lower point on the field? I don't need to start with the Zach Smith stuff and, Urban scandal and Tatgate and all that. On the field since 2012 when Urban took over.
I would think so.
You think being shut out by a clearly superior team in a playoff game is worse than getting your ass kicked by Michigan with the playoff on the line?
I think they're both bad. I guess you can make the argument that losing to Michigan's worse, for sure. I would say having a generational team being two steps away from competing for a dynasty and losing to a backup quarterback at home against Michigan State in 2015 was pretty bad too.
Yeah, I'm not saying that there weren't bad losses. I just feel like this one is going to sting more because no matter what happened with Ohio State, they always had this. This was the thing that they had. Dominance over a rivalry that they were, killing or killed. I wrote a story a few years ago that the rivalry was dead. It's very much alive.
I
don't know if it really matters. I guess we can get into semantic arguments about whether this one was worse or the 15. The point is that this is a very low point for Ryan Day. Mm-hmm. And we'll get into the game and we'll discuss it. But I do think that, I'm not dramatic, I don't think. And if I am, tell me by saying that this is a pretty critical juncture in his coaching tenure. And I posted a tweet And you saw it and you actually were making fun of me about it. And I guess maybe I said it wrong. But let me just read it. And I just want you to, like, tell me if you think I'm nuts. You know, because sometimes I am nuts during the game. I get emotional and excited. And, you know, I like to, you know, go off the cuff a little bit because I think Twitter's fun. But here's the tweet, and then you tell me what your reaction to that is. There have been plenty of lows dating back to the beginning of the Urban Meyer era, but when was Ohio State been lower than this? Season lost because it got its ass kicked by Michigan. This is the type of game that results in major changes across the board for the program.
Yeah. It felt a little, what's the word? I don't know if hyperbolic's the right word or not. I get where you're coming from, and I think a lot of people might have saw that and thought you were talking about, like, get rid of the head coach. And I know that's not what you meant, but I also know that that's, I also understand why people would go that way, especially considering the nature of college football right now. I think Michigan's pretty good, and they lost to a good team on the road, and, like, I get it. It's, like, it's the rivalry. They haven't lost in forever. Whenever you, like, it should never be okay for you to lose that game. I'm not saying it's okay that they lost that game. I'm, like, not quite there yet on, like, program defining or redefining or whatever, because I think the Ohio State-Michigan rivalry, like, requires more than just, like, a one-game snap judgment. If this is changing something, like, if Michigan's going to be this from now on, and this rivalry is what it was 20 years ago or 30 years ago, then, yeah, maybe some recalibration needs to happen. But, like, I don't know if everything that happened on that field on Saturday is, like, throw the whole thing in the fire and start over again. You know what I mean? Like, I think there are issues and issues that cost them a loss in the beginning of the year that crept back up, but I don't know if there's, like, Michigan-centric issues. I think Ohio State's issues that need to be addressed, like, go deeper than that. But
yeah,
I don't
know. We're talking about a program that demoted a very loyal and steadfast assistant coach after losing a Week 2 game against Oregon. And I understand that that might have been in conjunction with what happened in the national championship game. But every single time Ohio State has suffered a ground-shaking loss, there have been changes the following year. And it's like, is Ohio State's defensive staff going to be very different next year?
Yeah, but it's not just because of this. Like, they were bad last year. They were bad in the beginning of this year. They played terrible teams, and we never knew how good they were, and then they played another competent team, and it turns out they're still bad. But, like, it's not...
Yeah, it might not have been because of this, but if Ohio State would have continued to mask it and would have won the game as everybody was anticipating they would, and then went into the playoff and then, you know, made it to the national championship game because everybody in the playoff sucks this year except Georgia, you might be able to say, well, they made the national title, then you get another year of this.
Yeah.
So I don't think that this is a one-off, they lost this game, change everything, fire everyone type of scenario. But I do wonder this, and this is the prevailing thought that I have, and this is something that we should have considered, and I think I need to do a better job on this podcast of considering. Because I do think that I do just shy away from addressing issues, or I'm not strong enough or stern enough in how I actually feel, because I just feel like they're going to figure it out because of their recruiting rankings. And it's like, just because Ohio State is recruited the way it's recruited doesn't mean they get the benefit of the doubt that they're just going to fix everything all the time. And it's like, I was way too quick to get back in on the train of they're back after they beat the crap out of a bunch of shitty teams in the middle of their schedule. Mm-hmm. And, like, maybe the Michigan State game would have fooled everybody. 49-0 at halftime against a team that beat Michigan. I understand how I might have fallen for that trap. But Ohio State does not have a single reliable defensive playmaker on this team. And I don't know how they got to that point.
Subpar recruiting in 2018 and 2019. And, like, okay recruiting in 2020, but not great.
So it's just like, now we have to wait 3 years or two more years for them to get guys back into the program, like Denzel Burke, who might be the only identifiable star in the making right now. It just seems like, for how Ohio State has recruited, that, yes, it hadn't been up to the standards in 2019, especially because they had a small class and, you know, some of the guys that they recruited missed. But it is truly odd to watch Ohio State the way they lost that game. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. Like, Michigan's offense is average. Like, let's just call it what it is. And the entire game plan, you would think, from an Ohio State.
I don't think Michigan's offense is average. I think it is. lacking explosion in a way that Ohio State.
We'll see how average they are if they end up playing Georgia this year. And what? Yeah, I mean, probably a little bit more explosive. I'm just saying average in comparison to the elite level offenses that Ohio State's faced in the past. The game plan should have been what it is: slow the run down, don't let them pound it up your throat, down your throat, and make Cade McNamara put him in a position where he has to make a play. And I don't think that the entire game, Michigan's quarterback was ever put in a situation where he had to make a play. And it's just like a very odd way of losing. Like, it just 7 yards, 7 yards, 7 yards, 7 yards, blown off the ball. I think I read a stat somewhere, and you tell me if you read this too, Bill, but Hassan Haskins had 100 yards of rushing before being contacted. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what somebody commented on my story and said, like, I really enjoy when Bill does his film breakdowns, but I'm not sure there's much more to say here other than Ohio State got its ass kicked, which is like 100% true. Like, there wasn't Josh Gattis like toying with Ohio State's defensive scheme and finding the deficiencies and attacking the weak spots. This was just like, we're going to line it up and run it up your ass for 3 hours. And that's what it was. And I think I saw a similar set to you. It was like, I think it was like 2.5 or 3 yards before contact per rush or something like that for Hassan Haskins. Like, Ohio State was getting blown off the ball. And I think that happened against Oregon too. And I think it happened against Minnesota. And this was really the first team they've played since then that was capable of doing something similar. I guess you could say Michigan State was, but that game was a blowout so early that it didn't matter. Michigan State couldn't play that way. So, like, this was like a straight up, we're going to play the way we want to play, and the way we want to play is something that you can't stop. Which is like, obviously they need to reshuffle this defensive staff and probably bring in somebody new and like figure out which direction they want to go. But also, like, that's not scheme. That's just, it's a talent issue. It's a like competitiveness issue, I think. Like, it's a preparedness issue. Like, it's not just a defensive scheme that needs to be, you know, addressed in this offseason. They are not as good as they should be from a talent standpoint up front. Front seven. Just defensive linemen and linebackers getting totally blown off the ball. And that cannot happen when you're Ohio State really playing anybody. But it definitely can't happen when you're playing Michigan. Like, that's the kind of thing that like gives Michigan confidence that they can beat you again moving forward, and like the kind of thing where like Michigan can establish some kind of physical dominance in this rivalry where it actually does change and become something more than what it was the last few years. Like, that was, I guess I'm not shocked because it's happened before, but I think me and I don't know if you did, but I think a lot of people thought that they had gotten some of that fixed, and clearly they had not.
I'm very curious about what this means in the grand scheme of things. You know, because it's easy to sit here and, you know, they got their butts kicked, and I don't necessarily believe that Ohio State now is going to all of a sudden not be able to win this game. Like, Ohio State going into the Michigan game next year right now, if there was a spread that was Ohio State -7, I would take it right now. Like, it's not like I'm in a situation where I think that the rivalry has flipped, but if you think about it this way, Michigan is going to be a favorite and likely beat Iowa in the Big Ten championship game. Then they will be the 2 seed in a playoff where they will face a team that they're more than capable of beating because Alabama might not be in it, Clemson's not in it, and Ohio State that they just beat is not in it. Like, we could be literally a month away from a Michigan, or a month and a half or whatever the date is, from a Michigan berth in the national title game as a result of what happened on that field. So, when you look at the way that they've recruited, which I've been very, very critical of, you could be in a situation now where Michigan has a Big Ten championship, makes the playoff, and plays for a national champion. I don't think there's a million, they could beat Georgia in a million years. I think they're a good football team. I don't think they're a great football team.
I don't think anybody's beating Georgia.
Yeah. Well, I think Bama could beat Georgia. I think Ohio State on the right day could beat, well, maybe not anymore with the way that their defense. But I don't think there's no chance that Michigan's offense is going to score points against Georgia, because you can't win that against a real national championship. You can't win playing that way. That's Wisconsin ball, and Ohio State usually is immune to Wisconsin ball, you know, and that's what that was. But I wonder if this is going to be a renaissance. Like, no, listen, you know, me and Nick got into an argument about why I think this should be the standard for Michigan. And I wonder if this is going to be the thing that elevates them to that standard.
It's fair to wonder, for sure. You know, it is. I would think that they're going to go to the playoff, right? I'd be surprised if they lost Iowa. I haven't seen a line for that yet as of Sunday morning, but I'd imagine they're going to be favored going into that game. They should be. Iowa stinks, at least offensively. Yeah, so I think Michigan is going to go to the playoff. If they don't,
not only are they going to go to the playoff, they're going to go to the most advantageous path to the national championship in the history of the 7-year playoff.
If they're the two,
they're going to play Cincinnati in the first round.
They would be. I guess it depends. I think they'd probably play like Oklahoma. Like if there's a one loss Big 12,
there's no Bama or Clemson waiting for them.
Yeah.
I mean they're
right. No.
And they actually might be favored in the first playoff game. And if you would have told me before the year started that Michigan is going to make the playoff and be favored, I would have laughed in your face. Like the fact that this is happening is unbelievable. And I think it's great for the sport. I think it's cool that
I think
it's cool that there's going to be new blood. And like it's funny we group Georgia into the mix with the Ohio State, Bama, and Clemson's, but they've only been in the playoff one time. So even though they're kind of the usual suspect as it pertains to recruiting results and stuff like that, this is still their first or second rodeo trying to get in there too. So if they're the big bad wolf of the sport this year, they're still new blood to a certain extent as well. So, you know, I don't know if Notre Dame is going to backdoor their way into this thing or whatever, but
I was going to say, I like the idea of like everyone clamoring for something different in the playoff, and like the college football hipster version of the playoff is going to include Georgia, Michigan, and Notre Dame.
Could you imagine if there were a 12-team playoff this year?
I wish there was one.
Yeah, I mean, if there was, then Ohio State could win a national championship, maybe.
That's what's weird. Like, that's a weird thing to ponder. Like, the scenario where this happens again, but Ohio State still gets to play for a national championship. And also, like, I understand this doesn't mean as much as it used to mean, and you should, like, recalibrate because this is the nature of college football now. Like, the idea that Ohio State can go to Ann Arbor and get its ass kicked and then go to the Rose Bowl is kind of strange to me. It's kind of a weird
Yeah, well, it is funny because the game and the way that it went was utterly painful for the fans, I'm assuming, that are listening to this podcast and probably are more sick to their stomach than they've ever been in the last, you know, 10 years maybe.
Yeah.
I think that that is what makes the sport beautiful, and I would push back at the expanded playoff because there should be consequences for losing this game. And in the expanded playoff, it'll just be like, okay, well, we'll see you in the playoff then. And it would just be like, that's not what this sport is. So, you know, for everybody who was sitting in front of their TV crisscross applesauce watching Alabama almost lose to Auburn and seeing traditional powers go down, the reason why we're all fixated on these things is because we know that those teams will no longer be in the national championship discussion if they lose games like this. So the fact is we're 2 years away from this Ohio State team being 10-2, getting its butt kicked by Michigan and being deeply flawed from a personnel standpoint on the defensive side of the ball, away from not mattering anymore. And I wrote that column, you know, 6 months ago, and some people had a weird reaction to it, and some people agreed, and it, you know, everybody gets to view it the way that they want to view it.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Offensively, Bill, I'm wondering, do you think that Ohio State needs to reassert itself as a power running team?
I think their offense lacks a physicality, however you want to define that. And the easiest way to define that is running the ball.
Yep. Not that they're not a running team, but, you know,
I think there's a segment of the fan base that wants that misses that gets aggravated when Ohio State is playing basketball on grass. Like, I understand that sentiment. I think you need to throw the football to win a national championship. I think that's been proven out over the last few years. You need to be a dynamic throwing team to win a national title most years. Maybe this is the year where that's not true, but I think it's been true most years. So they need that, and they have that. But I do agree there's a force, a physicality, as I said, that's missing from this offense. The feeling where like Ohio State can just do what Michigan did, just lean on a team and like take their will away from them. Like they don't want to be out there anymore because you're just pounding them on every single drive. Like it kills a team. And Ohio State has not really was not able to do that against the best defenses it played this year. That's the thing. It's like that. And that's, you know, we talk a lot about the defense and rightfully so. And a lot of change has to happen there against the best defenses that Ohio State's played this year. They weren't very good. Like the best defenses, the most efficient defenses were like Nebraska, Penn State, and Michigan. And those were not good games for this offense. They didn't do enough. And there's plenty of blame to go around. It's not just one side of the ball. But like Ohio State's defense got two back-to-back stops against Michigan on Saturday, and the offense couldn't do anything. Like they were playing catch-up, I think, the whole game. But they weren't doing anything to kind of put that game back on even footing.
Well, I feel like Ohio State had like 19 false start penalties.
They had five false starts. There were 10 total penalties. I think 7 were on the defense. Like weird play calling. It's like I don't know. I don't know what's missing there, but there's like a disconnect. I think there's a disconnect between being a physical offense and then also like when to like try to turn that on. It's like they're running the ball on like 2nd and 10. Like they throw on 1st and 10, they don't get it. They run on 2nd and 10, and all of a sudden it's 3rd and 8, and Aiden Hutchinson is in your backfield. It's like that's not a good recipe, I think, for any offense, and especially not this one that was struggling the way it was struggling to block Michigan.
Also, you have to be like aware of the weather too. Not that I'm making this an excuse at all, and you tell me you were there, but it seemed like it was coming down really hard. And it's like in that game, that just passing, like how many times did they, like even that third down or that, was it a first down pass to Olave that was behind him in the end zone on the first drive there?
That was like, that was the only time I thought the weather had an impact, because the ball like kind of seemed to slip out of CJ's
Slipped out of his hands, yeah.
Yeah.
But like that isn't, I mean, I don't know.
I think there's something to like late November Big Ten game. It's snowing, the elements aren't great. Let's line it up and play.
You can't play like you're in a dome every single game. You know?
No, I agree. I think it was. Yeah, you gotta line it up and see who's more physical. And Ohio State was not physical enough on either line. And I think that's partly explainable because of recruiting on the defensive side. I think they need to get better up front. They need to bring.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the offensive line though. What's happening?
The offensive line. Like, there's a lot of talent there. And when it mattered the most this year, they did not play very well. And I don't, like, that has, in my opinion, that has to come back on the coaching. And, like, I know, like, Greg Studrawa, we've given him a lot of shit. Other people have given him a lot of shit for his recruiting. And I think there's the counter argument to that was always, well, like, he does a pretty good job developing the offensive line. And I think that's, like, a fair argument. I would push back on it a little bit because I don't think the development's been quite to the point that it needs to be. But they also just weren't very good. Like they were to have three or four five-star prospects up there, like guys who might are like in a conversation for first round draft pick stuff. Like they just weren't good. They weren't good. They never like established the line of scrimmage. They didn't move people when they needed to move people. And like it wasn't just an issue against Michigan. It's been an issue in all the most important games. Sometimes they got away with it, sometimes they didn't. But man, like you want to talk about a group that had like tremendous upside, and I feel like they didn't really come close to maximizing it. Like I might start with that offensive line.
Yeah. Didn't you say that Aiden Hutchinson had like 13 or 14 hurries?
15 pressures for Aiden Hutchinson. Yeah. According to Pro Football Focus. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's also, I don't know. It's like when Ohio State loses, you know how you say like fans have a hard time processing the loss?
Mm-hmm.
I have a hard time of like focusing on what we should be talking about on the first podcast after it. Yeah, it's like, should we be breaking down the game or should we be talking about big picture things? It's just like, I wanted to ask you a few things about the game that I thought were odd.
Mm-hmm.
And you tell me if you're with me on this.
Okay.
One, when Ohio State was down 7-0 and they got down into the inside the 5-yard line there to make it 7 to try to make it 7-7, mm-hmm. and they threw that pass to Olave that was behind him. Do you feel strange to you that they didn't try to run it 3 times and just put it in the end zone from the 2? And like, do you think that was like a personification of what was to come at that point? Do you know what I'm talking about? The sequence there at the beginning of the game.
I do. I'm okay with trying a pass down there, and like it was behind Olave. It also hit Olave in the hands. Like, it's a tough catch. The throw could have been better. I think he maybe should have caught it. But then it was third and goal from the 3, and they got a false start. And then it was third and goal from the 8, and CJ Stroud got sacked. But like, yeah, you should. You get inside the 5, you should be able to run it 3 times and score if you're Ohio State. Yeah. And this was not the first time this year that they were incapable of doing that. But no, I agree 100%. And I think part of that is stuff we talked about after like the Penn State game. It's like creativity, like the stuff they started doing the last few weeks with like the jet motion and motion in general down in the red zone. Like, they didn't do any of that this week. So it's play calling, it's execution. I think it's personnel issues on the offensive line when you get into those kind of gritty, you need to get 1 yard kind of areas. I do think leverage has been a problem for them, especially on the interior, but also kind of everywhere because everyone's 6'7". So yeah, there's a lot of things that go into that, but the end result is what you said. Like, if you were inside the 5 yard line, you get 3 cracks at it or whatever they had. It was first and goal from the 5. They ran for 2 yards, threw an incomplete pass, took a false start penalty, then got sacked. You should be able to run the ball 3 times and score.
Yeah, let me ask you this: how do you think CJ Stroud played?
Okay, he missed. He missed that touchdown throw to Olave. He missed one later, but they ended up scoring on that drive. So whatever, I'm not going to get hung up on that. I thought he got a little rushed at times, understandably so because of the pressure. But I thought he played okay. Like, I'm not, if I'm making a list of things that weren't wrong and weren't bad for Ohio State in that game, I don't know if I'm putting CJ Stroud on it, or if I am, he's pretty far down the list. What did you think?
I thought it was just he just does not handle pressure well. I don't know that any quarterback does when it's that type of pressure. But he's a different quarterback when he's in the pocket and there's no one in his face than he is when he's being pressured.
I think he completed like 60% of his passes under pressure, just as a counter to that. I
know we got stats, and stats are stats, but I just, watching the game, it just looked like Ohio State's offense was hopeless anytime there were people in the backfield. And that might not be a CJ Stroud thing. That just might be, oh yeah, no shit, dude, that's football. You know,
I think the thing that he lacks is escapability, I think, when that stuff starts to happen. So like, that is a CJ Stroud thing, but I don't know if I would say that he plays poorly under pressure, because I actually think he's played kind of well under pressure this year in the little bit that he's faced it, especially for a redshirt freshman. But I do think he is, and not that any other quarterback on the roster has this, but he is missing that thing that Ohio State has had in the past, where like, when stuff breaks down like that, the quarterback can do a little something. And he had that.
Yeah,
one,
I mean, you're used to seeing Justin Fields spin out of Aiden Hutchinson's grip and throw a 17-yard dart down the middle of the field. Like, that doesn't exist.
Right. So that touchdown run at the end was nice, but I got called back for holding.
Yeah, there was also one play, and I can't remember what sequence it was, and I don't even know if it was a zone read or not, but there was a play with the game on the line.
I know the player you're talking about. It wasn't a zone read.
I could have walked in the end zone.
Backside.
Yeah. And then lastly, I thought there are certain times where things happen in games where I think this is an indication of the way this game's going. I thought the way that Ohio State couldn't score when they were down 7-0, like we already addressed. But what did you think about Ryan Day's decision to kick a field goal and the clock management going into halftime there?
I would have tried to score a touchdown.
Okay, so I'm not crazy.
I think you can go either way, and I get, like, they were getting the ball back. I get that. And maybe it's a little bit of revisionist history because, like, in the second half, it felt like they could not get Michigan off the field. I guess in the first half, they were kind of. So I suppose it makes sense to think that you had stopped the bleeding a little bit defensively, so you take those points, you get the ball back, you go score. And maybe if they had gone and scored a touchdown there to start the second half, I would also think of it differently. So there's a lot of things that I think that cloud your judgment on that. But at the time, as it was happening, I thought to myself, like, I could kind of go either way on this. I might lean towards try to play for the touchdown. But I don't think it was an egregious decision to kick.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's crazy. But I think that your team takes that thought process, whether it's consciously or subconsciously, into account. Mm-hmm. And I think by going into that situation timid and kicking a field goal, you're sending an indirect message to your team that you believe that you're going to need those 3 points at the end of the game, which I think in turn gives both teams a mindset of the way that that game was going to go. In my opinion, if Ohio State scores a touchdown there before halftime, you take the air out of that stadium.
Yep.
You go into the break, and you get the ball back, and you score again, and all of a sudden you're up two scores, and then Michigan can't do what it did. At that point, there's not enough time for them to take a nine-minute drive and go 6 yards a pop down the field, which then turns it into a Cade McNamara thing, which then turns into another potential to throw a dumb pick like he did on the second drive.
Yeah.
And like to me, like that is if you're the coach, you might think not just about what does the back of the freaking card say because of the stats. You might think, what does all this mean? Because you might not agree with this, but I think kicking a field goal and being down 14-13 with the ball back and settling for field goal and letting time tick off the clock, the difference between that and going forward on fourth down and missing it is very little. Like,
oh,
I,
yeah, it almost
you, like, you it, it's I, what's the difference? You're getting the ball back down less than a touchdown. What, so
yeah, I feel like either way there, that the second you send the field goal team onto the field, Michigan's won. You're making
Michigan's won.
Not so you're guaranteeing game, not Michigan game, but won that moment.
Yes, right. And but, why do that if they're gonna? Why guarantee them to win a moment when you have a chance to kick them right in the groin? And in a game like this where they had so much confidence going, and I'm not saying that Ohio State would have won this way, but I think if Ohio State scores a touchdown before halftime and is winning at halftime, the game goes differently.
Yeah, and I think that's a thing with Ryan Day that has popped up a couple of times in big games, right? Like didn't they punt like from the plus side of the 50 against Alabama in the national title game, like before that game was out of hand? There are times like he touts being aggressive all the time. And like he's very good at being aggressive when Ohio State's up by 30, but I feel like there are times when like the chips are really down, and this takes a stones call, and if you get it, you're going to get ripped. But if you are truly aggressive, you would go for it, and he doesn't go for it. And I guess there might be people who think like, well, that's poor game management. Of course, you kick there. Maybe you do. I don't know, but I do feel like that juncture there is where the game was lost, in my opinion. They settled for the field goal. They kicked it. They made it. Whatever. Halftime, they had that dust up in the tunnel, which was awesome, by the way. I feel like that should happen every Ohio State Michigan game. And then I think like they came out of that, and I think Ryan Day was like very intent on like, okay, we had this, like everyone's on tilt. We had this little thing in the locker room. We're get the ball. We're going to come out there. We're going to run it down their throat, and we're going to take this game over. They ran it 3 times on 3rd and 2. They got stopped for a 2-yard loss. Because they couldn't win the line of scrimmage. And then Michigan gets the ball back and runs it 3 times for 81 yards and scores a touchdown. And like the game was over. That was it.
Ball game. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, I don't know if you also have to identify who you are and just know that, you know, maybe you're just not going to run the ball down someone's throat. And, you know, Garrett Wilson's catch, I think, is what Garrett Wilson is and what Ohio State is to a certain extent. And you're going to win and lose that way, you know. And, you know, I don't criticize them for wanting to try to run the ball. You're Ohio State. You should be able to.
Especially in that game. But, like, I feel like I've like, rewatched some of it. And I've not rewatched it, like, as intently as I rewatch most games because I don't really think people want a film study on Ohio State, Michigan. But it did feel like they were running into light boxes a lot, too, Ohio State was, and they still couldn't get anything going. Like, Michigan was playing with 2 guys over the top because they were worried about those receivers, which is how I thought they were going to play it, and Ohio State still couldn't run the ball. Like, that is, like, what's most frustrating about it. It's like you have that massive offensive line, 2 good tailbacks, 1 elite tailback, and you couldn't run the ball when you had the numbers to run the ball. Like, that's a bad look for Ohio State.
Yeah. So what do you think is next now?
I mean, there's a lot to get into.
We've got a lot of podcasts coming up this week, I bet. So like, but I
don't want to like go down too many rabbit holes because we need stuff to talk about between now and the bowl game and then after the bowl game, obviously. But like, clearly, I think there's going to be some staff changes here at some point, especially on the defensive side. I mean, I would look at the offensive line situation and figure out if you need somebody new there because it's not. I don't think it's good enough. And it's not just about this game. Again, people who think like we're overreacting to one game, it's not just this game. This game just magnified things. I'm like curious who's going to play in the bowl game and who's not. It could make it interesting if a lot of young guys might play whenever that bowl game is. Like, I think that could make it more worthwhile.
Opt-outs, you think?
Yeah, which is like fine. If you know, guys who are going to be first-round picks don't want to go play in an exhibition game, like more power to them. I wouldn't play in an exhibition game.
Would you opt out of the Rose Bowl?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Different. It's a different world, man. It's like,
yeah, no, I know.
It's just like, what did Marshawn say? Protect your chicken. Yeah, you got to protect your chicken. Yeah. So I think that's what we're going through now the next couple of weeks. And I also think there's some interesting stuff at quarterback too. Like,
oh yeah, I didn't even want to bring it up.
I know. Bring it up. I think there are many conversations to have about this moving forward. But like,
I want to tell you something before you go down this, and I'll let you finish. But I live in Texas now, as everybody knows.
And I got a saying down in Texas.
I gotta send you this video about something in Dallas that I thought was funny after the show. That's not appropriate, and I'd probably get fired up, is it? But I've made friends here with Brits friends.
Yeah.
And they all are college football nuts because this is Texas. And they all like UT and A&M. And they text me during Ohio State games now. And I had a Texas fan texting me the entire game. Like, why is Ohio State sucking? Why does C.J. Stroud playing like ass? Why can't they throw? Because he wants a scenario where Quinn Ewers wants to transfer home. And, like, yesterday he was devastated because now he thinks that Quinn Ewers has a chance to take the job next year. And I find that to be quite funny that people that other fan bases are still following this.
Yeah.
But it is kind of interesting that his 5,000-yard view of what's going on at Ohio State is going to be – a discussion point in July.
Yeah. Anyway, do I want to say this? I guess I'll say it. Everyone knows what I'm getting
at. It's a podcast. Come on.
No. I just don't want to say a thing that then starts like another 40-minute conversation.
Why not?
Because I want to drive home.
I know, but we've only been going for 35 minutes.
And get away from this shitty internet.
Dude, you know how sometimes you're watching a sitcom like King of Queens, which I like to watch before bed because it calms me and it's kind of my life? Chubby guy ends up with hot chick. He's kind of funny and eccentric. She's like the man of the house, you know. It's kind of like my.
You got Jerry Stiller running around in your house.
Well, her mom's a little weird. I'm just kidding. And my dad's a little weird too. Let's be honest.
your dad's insane.
Yeah.
Love a guy.
Couldn't love a man more. But, like, you know how they have to be continued sometimes at the end of sitcoms?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and then they just pick up next. We can do that.
Yeah, well.
Because we're going to record another one on Tuesday, right?
Yeah, at some point this week we're recording another one, yeah.
Yeah.
C.J. Stroud's not going to win the Heisman. He is not going to lead Ohio State to the playoff. And I think if he did those things, it would have been really hard.
Jake Fromm scenario.
To have, like, a truly open competition for quarterback. And it's not like CJ's been awesome this year. I think CJ is very good and going to get better. But I think the fact that he's not going to have those things like might creak the door open just a little bit to make this a little more of a competition than maybe we thought it was going to be. But it's not just I think most rational.
It's real, buddy. It's real. Yeah. No, I'm not saying it's bullshit. I think it's real. And listen, man, there is a legitimate chance that Quinn Ewers is a better quarterback than CJ Stroud, and I think it's okay to admit it. I think it's okay to say it. We don't know that for sure. We don't know that for sure, but the way that the man was rated, he should be really, 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 really good. And even if C.J. Stroud is an 85 on the Madden score, or a 90 even on the Madden score, there's a chance that Quinn Ewers is a 96. And if that happens, then you need to address it. And I think by addressing it, it's much easier to navigate the reality of the quarterback situation when the dude isn't returning from a playoff berth and a Heisman Trophy. And I think what this does is it at least safeguards Ohio State. And listen, maybe C.J. Stroud will win the job again next year. I'm not saying that he's now out of a job. What I am saying is that the good news is that Ohio State is no longer in the Jake Fromm Georgia scenario, where you don't have this guy who led the team to a national championship race, who is the clear heart and soul, quote unquote, of the team, that you can't bench for political reasons because you don't want to lose your locker room. Like all that bullshit that we heard from Georgia fans after they let Justin Fields go. Like if Ohio State sticks with CJ Stroud and he turns out to be like Jake Fromm, I'm not saying that he's
not. He's already better than Jake Fromm.
Listen, I'm not saying comparing him in his skill set. I know he's better. I'm just saying if he turns out to be this is what he is, and Quinn Ewers goes to Texas and wins the frickin' Heisman and becomes the first pick in the draft, then Ohio State should be criticized the same exact way that I criticize Georgia. Because as the coach of the team who makes, what, 8 $9 million a year. And as a quarterback guru, Ryan Day.
Seven.
Well, let me change my whole point then. Ryan Day needs to be able to identify that. So I'm very curious to see how it's talked about, how it's discussed. If you're at the Rose Bowl and you have media availability, I cannot wait for everybody to be around Quinn Ewers to talk to him. It's going to be a fun time. You're going to be in a tent. There's going to be a taco truck. I know the deal. Last time that happened, Tate Martell was making jokes about how he's going to beat Justin Fields out for the job. So, like, funny things happen at the Rose Bowl. I will say that I'm very curious about where it goes, and I think that there is a... It's weird, because Garrett Wilson's gone, Chris Olave's gone, Jeremy Ruckert's gone, their offensive line is gone. Like, this is the renaissance of a new offense. And that offense, and who that quarterback is for that offense, is going to be a very, very interesting thing to see unfold. Because it's going to be quarterback and Henderson. And then everybody, and Jackson Smith and Jigba. That right there, great nucleus. Everything else, like the quarterback, I mean, this is going to be fun.
You forgot to say Donovan Jackson.
No, yeah, well, I don't say the Lord's name in vain. So.
No, yeah, I think you're right. And I think, you know, people might have been just ticked off there about, like, it's not.
Who's I ticked off?
People think we neg CJ Stroud. I'm not negging. No, I think CJ Stroud. I think CJ Stroud, like, is good enough to win a national title. Like, I think he is that good. I think that highly of him. He is very good. But there are, I think there would have been extenuating circumstances that would have made it really difficult for Ryan Day to, like, truly have a competition for the starting quarterback job. And I think those are off the table now. And he could open it up if he wants to. And if he does, listen, CJ Stroud can win. Like, absolutely can win. He probably will win if they do that. But I just think it's more of a thing now than it would have been had CJ won the Heisman.
Do you actually think he probably will win because it's the politically correct thing to say?
No, I think he's good, man. There's no politics about it. I think he's good. No,
okay. I know I think he's good, too. The question is whether or not you think that Quinn Ewers has a chance to be great.
I think they all have a chance to be great. I have no idea. Like, we can, like, I get it. Quinn Ewers was the perfect quarterback recruit. I totally get it. Stars are important. Stars matter. He is the perfect quarterback.
I made it through this entire podcast without talking about stars. I'm just saying we have to be open to the possibility that C.J. Stroud, for how good he is this year and how great his potential is, might be the second best quarterback on the roster right now.
Yeah, and I also think we need to be open to the possibility that he's the best quarterback on the roster.
Absolutely. Of course we are. It's not offensive. I mean, I don't know why people would be mad. Nobody's saying that C.J. Stroud sucked this year. He didn't suck this year. I think he played exactly what I would have expected him to play based on what we thought about who he was coming into the year.
Yeah.
Most great moments. I mean, dude, the Heisman favorite 48 hours ago. Like, literally, the odds were that he was the Heisman favorite.
Bryce Young's a favorite now, by the way. Why is this happening?
He won the Heisman last night. Did you read my column?
Yeah.
I read yours.
Nobody with me? Nobody watched the Heisman Michigan game, I guess. Yeah, like, I'm not voting for... Why are we voting for Bryce Young? Because he scored on two-point conversions?
97-yard touchdown drive at the end of the game.
Yeah, I was watching it in my car.
No, that's not why people are voting for Bryce Young. People are voting for Bryce Young because they lack the critical thinking ability to pick somebody who's not a quarterback. And frankly speaking, I don't think most Heisman voters know shit about college football and even know who some of these guys are.
Yeah.
Like, if you're not a big college football nut, you might not even know who Will Anderson is. Like, you have to watch the games to know who these players are, and you have to watch them intently. So what do people do? They say, well, who's the team that is in the national championship race and who has the most recognizable quarterback? Oh, Bryce Young, I'm going to put him in there. What do you think people do in our straw poll at The Athletic? Look at the straw poll. Everybody was voting for C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young last week, and I thought that was insane.
Yeah.
Go. I want to check tape?
Not us, right, buddy?
Yeah.
I
think that this year of all years... The Heisman, and I honestly don't know if this is a bad for business, because I was actually asked to write the Heisman column. Does anybody even give a shit about the Heisman?
They care as much as it's one of those. It's yet another example where I don't think the public actually cares as much as sports writers do.
It's like a weird thing of, like, Heisman watch, Heisman straw poll, Heisman discussion, Heisman column. It's like, there's so much energy put into that trophy, and I'm like, if I were a casual fan, I don't think I'd really, you know, I'd be like Bill Burr. It's like, you know what? I don't think I really give a fuck.
I was thinking, though, as it relates to Ohio State, I don't know how it goes at other programs, but, like, If you win a Heisman Trophy at Ohio State, at some point they're going to put your name in Ohio, like in your number in Ohio State.
I know.
Like it's still, like, it's still me. Like
if you think about, if you think about all the players who have worn number 7 in Ohio State history, Ted Ginn Jr., Chris Gamble, some of the greatest players that you'll ever see. I thought it was funny, and I did think that it would be interesting to see number 7 retired with C.J. Stroud on the scoreboard, as if like he even comes close to measuring up to what those guys did.
Yeah, it's not retired. They don't retire.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
Somebody else could wear it, but it would have been, it would have been interesting, yeah, to see, to see that up there. But that, I mean, that's, that is what is at stake when we talk about the Heisman. But I don't know if that's a, that case everywhere. But yeah, it is at Ohio State.
But I don't know if people at Ohio State right now listening to this podcast care who wins the Heisman. It's just like I think
it's not going to be a Buckeye. So why would they care?
I think that voting for Bryce Young is lazy, and I think voting for C.J. Stroud before this week was lazy.
Yeah. Voted defensive player for the Heisman.
Yeah, I think that in a year where Ohio State, Clemson, and maybe Alabama aren't playing for a national championship and are missing the playoff, a year where conferences are expanding and disbanding, Power Five and what we know it is changing, and the fact that the playoff is on the verge of expanding to 12 teams, this is the year to get kind of funky. And
love to get funky.
My ballot I already submitted to Fortuna was easy as hell. Three defensive players. They're the three most outstanding players in college football this year, and I hope one of them wins it. And the fact of the matter is Bryce Young will win it because people can't analyze the sport right.
Yeah, I haven't set mine in yet, but I will
probably. There's also too many Heisman voters.
Yeah, there's like 900 of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
And I think that the 900 voters, like, it's only like 10% of the formula.
Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it. Tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point-of-sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/theathletic.
Let's get back to talking about Ohio State, Michigan. What did you think of Jim Harbaugh's quote after the game?
I loved that he said it because it makes the rivalry back. And, like, I was so starved. I think everybody's so starved for the rivalry. Like, everybody, like, immortalizes the Marcus Hall double bird, right? Mm-hmm. It's just, like, every single thing that happens in this rivalry. Like, how did Cam Brown not get ejected, by the way? He took a helmet off of a human being and threw it 25 yards in an opposing stadium. I'm not saying he did. I don't know. You were there. You saw it. It didn't look like he started the altercation.
He did not.
But it looked like he finished it pretty good.
he certainly escalated it. He did not start it.
All these things are cool. And I'm surprised. I'm sorry. Because like I had to write takeaways or contributed to Sunday takeaways this week. And this is what I did because I didn't see the quote in anyone's story. I think Jim Harbaugh was a snarky asshole when he started, which made it entertaining. And then he kept losing, and then he stopped saying things. Mm-hmm. And like the second that he won, it was like walking right back in on stage, like, I'm ready to ride.
Yeah.
And I think that's good because I enjoy watching people talk shit. and people saying things. And I also understand to a certain extent why he might not like Ryan Day after the Hang on 100 comment on him.
Yeah. It is interesting.
I don't know that I would categorize Ryan Day's emergence at Ohio State as not hitting a triple, though.
You mean like he was Harbaugh was off base on that?
I don't know that I agree with him. Like, do you think certainly, that Ryan certainly Day worked was born his way on up. Third base?
He certainly worked his way up to Ohio State for sure. Like, I think he earned that along the way. He was definitely given the keys to a Ferrari.
I think he stole third. I think he hit a double.
He hit a double third. And stole third. Yeah, maybe that's right. Maybe that's right. But I mean, I think the insinuation
worked up naturally though.
Yeah, the insinuation there is that like Ryan Day hasn't worked for anything he's earned, which is like not true, and like kind of a shitty thing to say. But also, I.
But what is he communicating there, Bill? Is he saying that working at Ohio State is easier than working at Michigan? So shut the fuck up. Is that what he's saying?
Yeah. Your job is easy. You inherited a machine. Talk to me when you have to build a program and build a team up like I had to. I think it's what he's saying.
Okay.
But, and it is, like, I don't know. I feel like, I think Ohio State and Michigan like has always been defined by like the emotion of things. I'm not so sure it's ever been defined by like verbal jabs back and forth. So like, I'm curious what people think of that. Like Ryan Day, for all we know, like did tell his team he was going to hang 100 on Michigan. And like, I think like turnabout's fair play and maybe Jim Harbaugh went a little too far with what he said. But I think if the end result is like, we're back in a position where like Michigan is not going to back down from Ohio State anymore. And like Ohio State got a, wake up call that like, it's not a given that you're going to win this game every year. And because of that, like the game is going to be back to like an emotion filled angst fest. Like it should be.
Cause it was an angst fest.
I think that's a good thing.
Right.
Well, like, maybe it's not a good thing for you. People listening, but I think it's good for
them. No, angst is good. That's why we like the sport. Like that's the whole thing. Like, it's like, of course it's good. Like why would you want to wake? I mean, I know everybody has their own take on how they view the rivalry. Some people will root for Michigan now in the playoff, and some people won't. Some people root for Michigan before the game. Some people don't. Everyone's got their own viewpoint on how they like to view this game. That said, next year when we do our podcast, it's going to be very different.
Yeah.
And it's going to be good. And the stories that you write are going to be better. And the things we talk about are going to be more interesting. And the fact that people are nervous during the game is what the rivalry is about. And I think that as shitty as it is that this happened, you can go watch that HBO documentary that everybody was making fun of me on and actually feel a little bit of a connection to it again for the first time in over a decade. And I think that's pretty cool. So, you know, I don't know what is going to happen. We don't know exactly how this is all going to play out in terms of the competitiveness of the rivalry. Ohio State still is recruiting infinitely better than Michigan.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. Like, Ohio State could win the next nine. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. But it's also interesting, too, and maybe we can talk about this some other, you know, the next show, but what does Michigan do from here is more fascinating than what Ohio State does from here. Because in a world where Mel Tucker and James Franklin got 10-year Illuminati contracts, what do you do to the guy who now beat Ohio State in a rivalry game and won the Big Ten, potentially? Like, that dude gets his bag back, right? And like,
oh, I don't know about.
You don't know how? Like, I think
his contract
$100 million deals flying around here.
I think his contract might be incentive laden in a way that he's going to get some of that back anyway. But
yeah, he is. But I mean, just like guaranteed back now.
Just like flip it back to what it was before because he beat Ohio State one time.
This is like literally. Like, this is the thing that was driving me insane on Twitter yesterday, and not to start another 20-minute discussion. But you can't spend all freaking year discussing how this is the only game that matters and that this is the thing that separates Ohio State and Michigan from the rest of the sport and that this is the game that is defining coaches and all this stuff and then say it's just one game. Like, this is literally a
program-defining,
altering win for Jim Harbaugh. It changes literally
You want to bet millions of dollars
in contractors? They bet millions of dollars on freaking James Franklin. They bet $100 million on Mel Tucker, right?
Yeah, because those guys were going. Yeah, but because they were going to leave. Like, is Jim, if Jim Harbaugh is going to leave for another job, then yes, maybe give him more money and more years on his contract because you think he's your guy and he stays. If Jim Harbaugh's not flirting with LSU and USC, no, you're not incentivized. He beat Ohio State one time.
I think
he lost the first five.
I think the entire narrative around Jim Harbaugh and what he was incapable of doing has shifted as a result of this one game.
I think it could be shifting. I think it shifted a little bit. I don't think you just do it once and everything's okay now. Like it's
I think
more,
you
more
do it
that.
One. Yeah, no, I know. If he loses the next three in a row, you'll be like, okay. But right now, as we sit here right now, Jim Harbaugh beat Michigan or beat Ohio State in an ass whooping. Is about to win the Big Ten, is going to go to the playoff, and actually might play for a national championship this year. Mm-hmm. Those are all things that everybody questioned that he was even capable of doing. The fact that he's done that at Michigan, which, believe it or not, is 48 hours ago we were being yelled at by Nick Baumgartner about how it's a second-class team. Doing all those things is maybe one of the most impressive coaching jobs coming off the heels of a disaster of a season last year than anybody in the Big Ten has done in the last 5 years.
I think he's coach of the year, yeah.
Yeah, and if he's coach of the year after doing all those things, think about what we thought about Jim Harbaugh on Thursday and think about what we think about him now. It's a completely – that bullet point on his resume alters the way I view him forever.
Because he did, yeah, that not for me, not for me. I am tremendously impressed by the coaching job he did this year.
I thought he was capable of it. I thought he was just a weirdo who didn't know how to recruit and was too arrogant to admit that he wasn't as good as the other team, and was making a ton of money and has lineage to Michigan, but like literally was not a coach and couldn't coach himself out of his own hat. And like,
yeah,
the fact
he got
that
the big win he's never been able to get.
Yeah, yeah, he and against a team that he was never supposed to beat. So like, to me, he's earned my respect.
I'm sure he appreciates it.
I don't think he cares. But I do think that...
When he said there were people were talking shit about him in his press conference, I thought he was talking about you.
I mean, I was just saying things that were fair, but now I think this is fair. More context reserves the right to change their mind, and I will say that I thought that Jim Harbaugh was a donkey, and I was wrong.
He had Ohio State's number. He had his team ready to play. Like they were, and Ohio State was not ready.
And it's like
to
play. I don't know. Like, did Michigan just completely change the way that they prepared for the game all year? That's like the one thing I thought about with from Nick Baumgartner's column, and the discussion that we had with Nick last week was that he had people in his office and, you know, had him change their approach and stuff. And it's like, I wonder with his willingness to take advice and listen and change, if he unlocked the secret that was missing.
It's certainly possible.
You know, and if that's the case, and I'm not saying that Michigan's all of a sudden going to beat Ohio State for the next 5 years in a row, but if the days of 59-27 are over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, and I think maybe that's more, maybe like a more pragmatic way of looking at it. But I honestly, I don't like the talent discrepancy is what it is. And like, I don't, unless maybe Michigan will win a national championship this year and start recruiting differently, but Ohio State's always going to be the more talented team, and as long as Ryan Day, whoever the head coach is in perpetuity, can maximize that, like, I think Ohio State is going to be winning probably more often than it loses. But not the first time in this rivalry that the less talented team played a better game and won. So
yeah, the interesting thing to me will be, and you've heard me bang my fist against the table for the last 5 years about what Michigan's potential is. They finally did the one thing that was seemingly holding them back from ever accelerating. I saw they got a few crystal balls for four-star high-end prospects on Saturday before the game started. Is if they can take whatever happens this year, don't go shit your pants against Iowa, go win the game, and take whatever they can with the Big Ten championship and a win over Ohio State to start recruiting at a higher level and not just finish number 11, 12, 13, 10, finish 5, and actually make this conference a two-team race. And that, to me, is what Jim Harbaugh's job is now. Like, now he beat Ohio State, everything's okay again, blah, blah, blah. Now go build the program into something that isn't shocking the world every time they do this. And, like, that, to me, is more interesting. Now, I don't know if we're ready to wind this down, but I have my to-be-continued discussion that we can start again on Tuesday.
Okay.
And I didn't want to ask you this now, or at the beginning, because I just would have gone off the rails and we had to talk about the game. But somebody sent me a tweet, and it might just be a psychopath fan, or it might be somebody who is an insightful person as it relates to how he views his team. Not that Ryan Day is on the hot seat or anywhere near the hot seat. But how do Ohio State fans view their coach now? Being 1-1 against Michigan, not really making much adjustments in the three games with defensive issues. I mean, they made adjustments, but clearly have issues that spanned multiple seasons and have cost multiple national championships. Like, does Ryan Day... My thought is that we're going to be reminded about how transcendent of a coach Urban Meyer really was in the next few years. But I'm wondering, what do you think is crucial for Ryan Day next? And is he ever in danger at all of losing the fan base?
I think anytime you lose to Michigan, yeah, I think that's probably the case, right? And it's been like historically the deal with this program. You have to beat Michigan. So he's 1-1 and missed a game that they probably would have won, but you know, you don't get to count that. So you know, I don't know if it matters matters much. If he loses the fan base, it matters if he loses the trust of his athletic director, and he hasn't. So like, I don't think he's like I hesitate to say the words Ryan Day and hot seat in the same sentence, because like, I don't think we're anywhere
near we're nowhere that near it galaxy. We're nowhere near it, but I wonder if how many years we could be away from it. Like, do you start thinking about those types of things, or is it just like one game, no big deal?
I don't start thinking about those things now. If they lose to Michigan next year and they don't make the playoff again next year, maybe. I think it's fair. I think it's fair given what the expectations are for Ohio State's program. But I also I do wonder where Ohio State fans would land on that, because you're right, they've come up short.
Like, what do Ohio State fans think of Ryan Day right now? Like, I think it was a mistake for me to even say the word hot seat, because I think that is stupid and it detracts away from what I'm trying to say, which is, do you think Ohio State fans have lost kind of confidence or are losing confidence, or the temperament that they have toward their head coach is shifting right now?
I think it probably is mostly because you're still caught up in the moment. I think if you take a step back and look at the way that he's addressed some things, like in season, out of season, how he responded to lose at the Clemson in 2019 and then came back and beat him in 2020, like, I think there are some things that can inspire confidence there, like a lot of things that can inspire confidence. So I don't think he's lost much once you can you remove yourself from the emotion of losing to Michigan for the first time since 2011. But I would be interested to hear that too. And I don't know. We have the email thing for a reason. Like, if you're listening to this and you have thoughts on just sort of how you're feeling at the moment about the program or the head coach or where things are going, like, send them to us. We'll read through them and get a better idea of where that is. But I think it's a hard thing to answer because of the emotion of the moment. But I think that Ryan Day will probably end up proving himself to be the right guy here in the long term.
Yeah, I trust that to be the case too. All right, Bill. Good luck on those icy roads on the way home. Miss you. Really sorry that you're not coming out here. It kind of sucks. But, you know, enjoy Pasadena, and don't you dare go to freaking In-N-Out.
Get a double-double.
Don't even look at it.
Style.
Honestly, then, if you see it on the road, look the other way.
Throw in the garbage and then
you're no longer welcome.
Baconator. Yeah.
Not welcome.
Not allowed to go to In-N-Out because I had the audacity to say that I like a Wendy's cheeseburger also.
Correct. That's it. All right. Thanks. That was 4-6 with A&B. We'll talk to you guys on Tuesday.